You're back with Annie on Solidarity Breakfast on 3CR, your community radio station. The announcement that Australia is a happy signed-up member of the AUKUS Nuclear Subs Club last week sent shivers down the spine of any thinking Australian. A rally against the move to a nuclear Australia and war with China at the US behest was held outside the State Library on Saturday. First, we hear from David Sweeney from ICAN, the International Campaign to Abolish Nuclear Weapons, who emceed the event. Dr. Margaret Beavis from the Medical Association for Prevention of War, John Landis, former diplomat, and Kevin Bracken, former MUA, Maritime Union of Australia State Secretary. Here we go.
Good to see you here. Welcome. We've received solidarity from representatives of the Kulin Nations who can't be here today. Send solidarity and greetings to this message. I want to acknowledge that we're standing here today on unceded land of the Kulin Nations. It always was and it always will be Aboriginal land, like all of this country. And it's important to say that today because First Nations people in particular are particularly impacted by the nuclear industry in the history of Australia. It's 70 years ago this year that the first mainland nuclear test happened at Emu Field in South Australia. 70 years ago in October this year. And the Atomic Imperial Project continues. Now we're smaller in number, but that's because this has been a quick turnaround in response to a pretty ugly week. And I'm sure a lot of people heard the Bureau saying this was going to be a pretty ugly day, pretty hot and trying. So we're going to keep it pretty brisk today. We ask very much that you take care, keep hydrated, even though it's not beating down sun, it's still warm enough. Keep hydrated, do the sunscreen, don't be like me, put on a hat, and keep an eye on each other. My name's Dave Sweeney. I work as a nuclear analyst and advocate, a nuclear-free one, analyst and advocate with the Australian Conservation and National Environment Group. I'm also one of the co-founders of ICAN, the International Campaign to Abolish Nuclear Weapons. And I know that there's other people from ICAN in this audience today, and a big shout out to them, because that's the initiative that Australia should be showing. That's the initiative Australia should be showing. That initiative grew here, in this town, was launched here, in this town at the Parliament up the road in 2007. And 10 years later in 2017, it was pivotal in seeing the adoption of an international treaty to prohibit nuclear weapons, the worst weapons of mass and indiscriminate destruction in our world. In 2017, it won or was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize for that work. In 2021, that treaty entered into international law. And for the first time now, long overdue, nuclear weapons are illegal in international humanitarian law. Now that is Australian leadership on nuclear. Not getting subs, not spending so much money for so little. It's good to see you here today because it's important to affirm ourselves that we're not alone. Because a lot of people sitting, standing, reading the paper, listening to the radio on Tuesday morning would have been gobsmacked and felt alone. Where did this come from? How did this happen? Who decided? In whose interest? Who asked me? Well, no one did. That's the whole thing with this. No one did. This idea was brought up by three men, Boris Johnson, Scott Morrison, Joe Biden. It was announced as a surprise and in secret. Two of those three have now gone. So should this plan. The biggest defence spend in Australia's history. $368 billion and growing. Opening our ports to foreign subs. Opening our land to high-level radioactive waste that lasts hundreds. Literally, Nuclear Regulatory Commission of the United States, hundreds of thousands of years. No discussion, no cost-benefit analysis, no risk assessment, no public debate, no parliamentary debate. There is no mandate for this. This is the apex of creepy, controlled, secretive processes done Orwellian style in the name of democracy. There is nothing democratic about the most consequential decision in Australian defence and foreign policy history, made without public input at all. So a week's a long time in politics, and this has been an ugly week. Take care of yourselves, folks, because for many of us, this is something we've worked on for a long time. We need to take care of ourselves because we, unfortunately, now will need to continue to work on it for a long time. So if you're sad, shocked, angry, disappointed, frustrated, you're not alone, and you are absolutely not alone. There are snap actions in Australia and cities this weekend, all around the place.
G'day, my name is Margie Thorpe. You are listening to 3CR Community Radio 855 on your dial.
Now, one of the key AUKUS concerns is the human cost, the environmental cost, the economic cost, but particularly the human cost of war and of war fighting preparations. Our first speaker today is Dr. Margaret Beavis. Now, Margie is a GP and she's a medical educator. She's the National Secretary of the Medical Association for the Prevention of War, and she's the co-chair, a co-chair of ICANN. And she has worked hard, long, effectively to do preventative healthcare medicine by preventing war, the ultimate health abuse. Great pleasure to introduce Margie Beavis today.
Thanks, Dave. Thank you all for coming. I'd also like to acknowledge the traditional custodians of the land on which we meet, the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, and this land was never ceded. There are so many things wrong with these submarines on so many levels. It's hard to know where to begin. Government is all about choices and the future direction of Australia. Our government could be choosing a healthy, well-educated society where poverty and homelessness are effectively addressed. Instead, they're choosing an extremely high-risk, extremely expensive, aggressive submarine that's poorly suited to defending Australia. Numerous experts, technical experts, have come out saying it's highly likely that by the time these submarines arrive, if they arrive, they will be obsolete. And worst of all, these submarines lock us into yet more American wars. It's almost 20 years ago to the day that we joined America invading Iraq. Lest we forget, almost a million Iraqis died. The wars we joined with them in the US, in Afghanistan, and in Vietnam, millions more of women, children, civilians died because of these wars. Australia is willfully blind to the cost of these wars. War with China is unwinnable and will be so much worse than all of those. The only winners will be the weapons companies. I was appalled this week to hear members of Parliament spouting talking points that I saw in Lockheed Martin advertisements 4 or 5 years ago. So what are the real costs of these subs for the Australian people? For local communities, these are floating naval nuclear reactors. We may never be told if there's an accident while they're in port. Rex Patrick, a submariner himself, with freedom of information, found that Defence did not want an independent regulator. They want to regulate themselves. Indeed, in England, the UK has said it will not tell, since 2017, it will not tell any of the British people if they have a nuclear submarine accident anywhere. Australia may well do the same. Ports and construction sites will become nuclear weapons targets. And which lucky community is going to be left with the high-level radioactive waste? We can't even find a community to take the much less toxic nuclear waste that we have ourselves, and that is a much tinier amount. For Australia more broadly, this means that there will be much less spending on critical needs. What really makes Australia safer? Not these submarines. Climate change is clearly our biggest threat. Bushfires and floods are only going to increase. Just imagine 350 public servants working with in-depth, strategic, long-term planning for climate and a budget perhaps half of what these submarines were. Australia would be a leader on climate action, and we would have many, many more jobs than the paltry amount that are promised to us. As a GP, health is close to my heart, but I think health is close to everybody's heart. The public hospital system was underfunded before the pandemic. The AMA said that over $30 billion had been stripped from hospitals between 2016 and 2020. It's no surprise we have long waiting lists, an undermining of Medicare with no indexation, so the out-of-pocket costs are rising and rising for patients. We have pathetic underfunding of preventative healthcare. And for primary healthcare, the GPs, it's said that if more than $20 billion, we could save more than $20 billion in admissions to hospital if they were properly funded. Instead, we face more cuts, more budget repair. We are heading down the path of the broken US health system, where people go bankrupt due to their health expenses, and the health outcomes are so much worse because people can't afford to see a doctor. I've worked in New York for 3 years as a doctor, and it was terrible that people presented so late and so sick. What else would make Australians safer than these submarines? Looking at poverty, in Australia today, there are 3 million children who are living in poverty. These families are more than $280 a week below the poverty line. These children are largely from single-parent households. They say about half of children from single-parent households live in poverty. New Start is the second lowest in the OECD. We should hang our heads in shame. When the COVID payment came in, we halved poverty overnight. We know what we need to do to reduce poverty. We just choose not to do it. With inflation, there are soaring costs for essentials, for food, for rent, and for energy. The COVID payment, right now there are people on income support who are skipping meals, foregoing essential medicines, and turning off their hot water just to keep a roof over their head. Homelessness and lack of housing needs greater funding. ACOS is calling for a 10-year, 25,000 dwelling per year pipeline of social housing investment. That would be a doddle compared to building these subs. Domestic violence services are completely overwhelmed. More than one woman a week dies at the hands of a violent partner, and countless more suffer because they have no options. Legal aid in Australia is broken. The Law Council has said that hundreds of millions of dollars of cuts by successive federal governments has pushed legal aid to the brink of collapse. I could go on. Closing the gap, our schools and universities, so many other vital society needs are underfunded. Diplomacy. They've increased the funding a little for diplomacy, but it needs to be front and centre. It is key to maintaining peace and should be central to our efforts. So to conclude, and others will speak to this, this is an exorbitant cost for an extremely risky project. It sets a very dangerous proliferation precedent. It locks us into the next US war, and it's likely to spark a regional arms race. But most of all, what does it mean for us heading where we're heading as a nation? I'd like to quote Paul Keating saying that this is the worst international decision by an Australian Labor government since Billy Hughes tried to introduce conscription way back in World War I. Government is about making choices, and this one is a total disaster. Instead of a reckless, exorbitantly expensive, obsolete, aggressive catastrophe, or should I say a catastrophic boondoggle, we need real action on climate change and a fairer society. Thank you.
Thank you, Maggie Beavers. That's a prescription for sanity just there, and it's also a sad reflection of where we are and the choice that's been made this week. Now, part of the subtext of AUKUS, A-U-K-U-S, is another five-letter word, C-H-I-N-A. It's amazing. Massive trading partner. A few years ago, it was like, this is going to propel us into prosperity forever. A few years later, it's like the biggest demon in the world has spun out of nowhere, and some people and some players and some papers that should know better, red alert, banging the drums for war in the most irresponsible and reckless way. It is a disgrace. It's not only a disgrace, it's a danger. It's a provocation and it's a risk. Now, one person who knows a lot about China is our next speaker. John Lander was a Korea diplomat, and that included a stint as deputy ambassador in Beijing. He's familiar with the place, its people, its politics. He's a regular commentator, especially in the policy journal Pearls and Irritations, and it's great to welcome John here today. Thank you, David. Today, we are facing the 20th anniversary of the destruction of Iraq and the wanton slaughter of over 100,000 people, or hundreds of thousands of people. When the lie of the weapons of mass destruction was revealed, the excuse was given, oh, we joined the coalition of the willing, should have been called the coalition of the killing, to preserve our precious alliance with the United States. The coalition of the killing was formed under the pretext of the ANZUS alliance. Like some odious strain of a pandemic virus, it is now mutated into AUKUS to lie us into yet another war. The new great lie, which we have seen splashed across the pages of the television screens and of the Nine Network, is that China is a military threat to Australia because of its imminent attack on Taiwan, whose democracy Australia is somehow obliged to protect. It is a lie that Taiwan is a separate entity from China. It is a lie that China intends to seize it by force. And it is a lie that it has plans to do so within the next 3 years. A triple whammy of lies. Taiwan has been a province of China for centuries longer than Australia has existed as a nation. And Australia, with its recognition of the People's Republic of China, affirmed that fact. In his New Year address, President Xi Jinping reiterated his country's commitment to the peaceful, gradual reintegration of the Chinese family
on both sides of the Taiwan Strait. Some threat, that is. A further lie is that China is bent on aggression towards Australia. China has not surrounded Australia with hundreds of military bases, as the US has done to China. China does not conduct frequent, regular freedom of navigation operations in Australian waters, as the US and Australia do to China. China does not conduct freedom of overflight operations in Australian skies, as the US and Australia do to China. Although under the so-called rules-based order that Australia espouses, China would have a perfect right to do all of that to us. China has not vowed to increase the range and lethality of its high-end warfighting capability to well beyond its shores, as Australia has done. China has not threatened Australia with a nuclear strike, although Australian, American, and even Chinese geopolitical analysts agree that if Australia were to go to war against China, it would make itself a target. If America succeeds in provoking China into war, US operations in that theater will be launched, commanded, and controlled from Australia, thus leaving us no choice but to be a major target. Now that Richard Marles has declared that all US assets are interchangeable with the Australian Defence Force, the identity of the ADF can be used as a cloak by the US. So America will be able to use its preferred option of conducting its military hostilities against China by proxy, as it has openly admitted it is doing against Russia in Ukraine right now. The US continues. Even last week there was another congressional visit to Taiwan. It continues to try to maneuver Taiwan into being the trigger proxy for the war. Australia, Japan, the Philippines, and any other country that the US can knit into its network of alliances will be supporting proxies in this lethal theatre of the absurd. Australia is now on board the American war train, which is hurtling out of control down the track towards the abyss. Instead of shutting our eyes and enjoying the ride, we should all stand up and put on the brakes.
Thank you very much, John Landon.
G'day, my name is Margie Thorpe. You are listening to 3CR Community Radio 855 on your dial.
Now, many sections of the Australian community have worked long and hard for peace and have a long connection with peace and anti-war struggles. Australian trade unions have a proud and pivotal role in this, and it's heartening to see Australian trade unions now, some at least, starting to get over the shell shock of what this decision is and starting to say, yeah, okay, there's some jobs, but there's a hell of a lot of risk and there's a hell of a lot of jobs elsewhere. Unions in Britain have launched a campaign around AUKUS and militarisation in the UK. Fund workers, fund welfare, defund warfare. Our next speaker is Kevin Bracken. He's the former State Secretary of the MUA, and they have a long history in progressive struggle, in working and building peace, and in preserving nuclear-free seas. Welcome, Kevin.
Thanks, Dave. Our secretary can't be here today and he's asked me to read this out as a message from the Maritime Union of Australia. Our mainstream media are trying to manufacture consent for the Australian government to commit us on the path of war with China. Without having any debate, unless there's a groundswell of opposition from the people, we've signed up for nuclear submarines that have gone from $100 billion to now $360 billion in a week. As every major defence contract has done, this cost will continue to increase as time goes on. For a small fraction of that, we could bring back our own shipbuilding industry and manufacture ships for our defence, not offensive weapons to be used in a battle between two competing superpowers. These yards could be used to also be used to build construction vessels for the offshore wind farms that will be built off our coast. There are only a few vessels that are used for constructing wind farms, and they're already booked out in years, for years in advance. If our government was serious about defending Australia, they should fix our problem with our fuel security. It wasn't brought out until the Maritime Union warnings, when the government allowed the last of the Australian tankers to be run by flag and convenience operators. We have about 3 weeks of fuel until the Army, Navy, Air Force, emergency services, trucks, farm machinery and our cars come to a grinding halt. If the government was concerned about security, this would be the first item to address. 90% of our refined fuels are imported. We do not have one Australian flag tanker, and we have only two refineries operating here. The current government's blind subservience to the US alliance is not adding to our security, but making the possibility of a nuclear war a likely possible outcome. For over 30 years, the US has abused its hegemonic position as the only superpower to the benefit of a few and against the interest of the other 99.9% of the world's people. Have we learned nothing after following the USA in its futile overt wars in Afghanistan, Iraq, Syria? Such wars have brought death, destruction and destitution to the people of these countries, leaving tens of millions of people to seek refuge, to leave their homes and seek refuge in a world that unfortunately too often is indifferent to their suffering. The military-industrial complex and the corporations that profit from the pillage of these countries' natural resources count their profits in dollars, while the people count their cost in bodies and misery. The cost of war to us is also not only financial, but borne by our military in deaths, wounds, post-traumatic stress, ill health and suicide. War with China would bring the war to us. With Australia jointly operated nuclear submarines, we are automatically in any war between the USA and China or any other country that they declare war on. Why is it that every new defence strategy comes after our Prime Minister visits Washington? From buying nuclear submarines to our new alliance, AUKUS, but it should be properly called US-UKA, you sucker. But that would be too honest and too open about what it's all about. It's time for us to realise that the military-industrial complex in the West is classically fascist. The same people move seamlessly from the positions of the Department of Defence and the boards of Raytheon, Boeing, Lockheed Martin and other companies that form part of the military-industrial complex. As Mussolini said, I prefer not to call it fascism, I prefer to call it corporatism. It's the merger of the state and the corporations. Now our politicians seem to be operating in their best interest, not ours. With every crisis, the media works up the population, then the banks and the corporations, whether military, industrial, pharmaceutical, line up for the government checks. Of course, they're always paid for by the people, who we're always assured that they're doing it for our security. The MUA fully supports today's rallies, which are being held all over the world, and we condemn the cowardly subservience of the Australian government that it's exhibiting to the war hawks in Washington. The Australian Constitution states that the Australian government's run by the people through its representatives. We must remind them that they govern for us, with our permission, not over us. Democracy is not about voting every 3 or 4 years, it's about holding our representatives to account. And I want to thank everyone here for making the effort to come out here today. And it's up to us to lift the consciousness of other people about what's really going on here. Thank you.
We have just been listening to some of the speakers at the anti-AUKUS rally outside the State Library, Melbourne, on Saturday. David Sweeney from ICANN, the International Campaign to Abolish Nuclear Weapons, who emceed the event, Dr. Margaret Beavis from the Medical Association for Prevention of War, John Landis, former diplomat, and Kevin Bracken, former MUA State Secretary.